Tim Bunning, of course, needs no introduction. He's been here before and I'm sure is well known to all of you. But Tim, of course, is working in the New York City area, and we're glad to have him with us tonight. I don't want to take any more of his time, so if you will, read together with me Luke chapter 12, and we'll begin in verse 16. It says, "And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." Now Tim will bring us the lesson.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm very grateful again for the opportunity to be able to speak. I have a lot to say, so we'll go ahead and get to it. Jesus says, "Woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep." Have you ever been hungry because there was no food, or there's no money for you to buy food? If you never have, as I never have, then I believe this woe is for you. And if Jesus would come into our assembly, I believe he would have a lot of woe towards us, because he realizes how many Americans blessed with prosperity are tricked into living this life for today and for the pleasures we have now, rather than for the pleasure and the promise we have for the future. Our riches tempt us to enjoy life for today rather than for our future. That's Luke 26, 24, and 25. "Truly I say to you, it is hard for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And again, I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter into the kingdom of God." That's Matthew 19, 23 and 24. Jesus pities us because he realizes the great challenges that we have before us because of the prosperity that we experience. He's aware of the extra temptations our riches bring us. And he's aware of the extra responsibilities and obligations that come with our riches that we'll be tempted to shirk and avoid. "You say, I am rich, I have prospered, and I need nothing, not realizing that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined by fire, so that you may be rich, and white garments so that you may clothe yourself, and the shame of your nakedness may not be seen, and salve to anoint your eyes so that you may see." It's Revelations 3, 17 and 18. We see our prosperity as a blessing, but Satan can use it as a curse against us. We need to be much more benevolent in general. This is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And now that I'm much more independent than I was 5 years ago, and you know, I get my paycheck, and one of them I get from here. And, you know, I pay my rent, and I buy the things that I buy. You know, I question, you know, what should I do with my money? Do I make too much money? How am I using it? It's a challenging thing to live the lifestyle that we live. It's a blessing, and it's comfortable, and it's easy. But as we know, many comforts and many pleasurable, many easy things are not blessings at all, but rather the things Satan uses against us to fool us into living sinful lifestyles. I don't think that we're teaching about benevolence and generosity to the poor that much. I mentioned I was teaching this, and someone told me that, you know, they hadn't really even heard a lesson about this topic, and I haven't heard that much of it myself. I mean, perhaps maybe if we were very benevolent and we were always giving, we wouldn't feel so guilty about teaching about it. But maybe since this is something that we kind of forget about, And we are guilty about teaching about it. But the thing we need to realize is generosity to the poor and benevolence is not an option. We're going to see that our salvation depends on how much we give to those in need. That's what struck me about a half a year ago. There are several passages, several stories we'll go through where people's salvation depended on whether or not they were generous to the poor. It's an extremely important thing, so hopefully this will be helpful to you. We're going to refer to a lot of passages and read a few, but mostly I'll make mention of some and summarize for the sake of time. So I'll be speaking through a lot of passages. To help get things into perspective, we'll look at some statistics. Alright, so here we have some statistics. Right in the top, it says the world's poorest make up only 1.5% of the world's consumption. You look at the pie chart, the little green sliver, the poorest 20% in the world, a fifth of the world, that's how much they consume, whether it's food or electricity or any resource like that. The middle consume 60%. The world's richest consume three-fourths of all the world's resources. Here's another chart, very similar. You see the top richest 10% of the world consume 60% of all the world's resources. For an equal number of people, the poorest 10%, 0.5% of all the food and water and things like that. And you see how the idea is the rich consume and take everything, leaving nothing for anybody else. Here's the world's income. So the top 20%, this wine glass shape, that's how much income they make. And you get down to the poorest, they make 1.4% of all the world's income as compared to 82.7%. So 20% of the people are making 80% of all the money in the world. It's very skewed and very slanted. And it's just not even whatsoever. It's also a fact that the world is wasting money on vanity and emptiness. This chart here shows us that the United States spent $8 billion on cosmetics. Europe has spent $11 billion on ice cream. You know, these are definitely unnecessary things. Things that you and I enjoy, probably on a fairly regular basis. And if you look, how much money was spent on water and sanitation for the world, it's $9 billion. It's $1 billion more than one nation spends on cosmetics. It's very perverted and very skewed. And it just shows people living a luxurious lifestyle, we've got things wrong in our head. Our lifestyle isn't normal. It's not what it should be. We're very occupied with unnecessary things. It looks normal because it's everywhere around us, but it's just not. It's also a fact that we are among the richest 20%. This chart states that 50% of the world's population, half of everybody in the world, they live on $2.50 a day. Whereas 80% of the world lives on $10 or less a day. So the question is, if you live on more than $10 a day, that puts you in the richest 20%. Going back, that's the richest 20% there. This needs to be at least humbling, if not frightening, for us. We need to kind of realize what's going on. We are the richest people. And just because we're surrounded by rich lifestyles and luxury, it doesn't excuse our selfish living and our overconsumption. So what are some results of these statistics? According to UNICEF, 22,000 children die of poverty-related deaths, whether it's lack of food or lack of health care and things like that. Out of the 2.2 billion children in the world, 1 billion are living in poverty. So nearly half of the children in the world are in poverty. Of 1.9 billion children living in the developing world, 640 million of them live without adequate shelter. 400 million live without access to safe water, which makes the measly 9 billion spent on water as opposed to the 11 billion spent on ice cream makes that seem a little bit more shameful as well. 270 million live without access to health services. There's a lot of people in need. There's a lot of people who don't have a fraction of what we have. There's a great need for us to be more benevolent than we have. I think that's a parable. What does the Old Testament say about benevolence, about giving to the poor? I think it's powerful to see so much of the law is covering the poor people. So much of what God's commandments about in the beginning were about helping the poor. And we're just going to make some references here. Exodus 22:25, if your poor brother needs to borrow something, you let him borrow it, and you don't charge him interest that you're going to get back later. Exodus 23:11, every seventh year, it's like the year of Jubilee or something like that, I forget. Every seventh year, it's not the year of Jubilee, no. Anyway, it's like the Sabbath year. Every seventh year, you don't work, and you leave all your crops and things in the field, and the poor people can come up and eat that for the whole year. Leviticus 25:39, if your brother becomes poor and he has to sell himself as a slave, you don't take him as a slave, you hire him as a fellow worker, and you pay him. And then you release him when his time has ended. Leviticus 19:10 is the passage that says, when you gather in your crops, you don't take everything. You leave a portion of it just so people can come up and eat it. You leave it there for the poor. Deuteronomy 15:7, and we're going to skip and read verse 11 as well. If among you one of your brothers should become poor, and any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against the poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and to the poor in your land. So much of the law was about giving to the poor. You can turn to Job 29. We'll read a passage there. We all know that Job was an exceedingly righteous man. And what was one of the things that made him so righteous? It was his benevolence. He was exceptionally benevolent. We all know he was very, very wealthy. And here was an individual who used his wealth very wisely. Job 29, verses 9 through 16. The princes stopped talking and put their hands over their mouths. The voices of the nobles was hushed, and their tongues stuck to their palate. For when the ear heard, it called me blessed. For when the eye saw, it gave witness because of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind, feet for the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from its teeth. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all the night on my branch. My glory is ever new with my hand, and my bow is renewed in my hand. And it continues. So Job expressed his righteousness about how he took care of everybody. Whether orphan or widow or poor, he took care of everybody. He continues in Job 31, verses 16 following. If I have kept the poor from their desire, or have caused eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, and the orphan has not shared it, but from my youth he grew up with me as with a father, and from infancy I guided her. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or that the needy had no covering, if his loins have not thanked me, if he has not been warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the orphan, because I saw I had support in the gate, let my shoulder fall from the socket, and my arm be broken off at the elbow. For calamity from God is a terror to me, and because of his majesty I can do nothing. Job says, if I haven't done all of these things, if I ate my bread alone, and didn't share it with an orphan, and God ripped my arm out of his socket. The fact is, Job lived his life that way. And yet, how does that compare to the way that we are living? So then the question is, why is it that we do struggle to be so benevolent? If we have more resources than more than the rest of the world, why is it that we, in an abundance, have such a hard time using our resources to help other people? There's a couple of reasons that I've kind of come up with. One is America stresses financial independence. This is kind of a cultural thing. I mean, we are capitalists for a time of living. And, you know, and the idea is you work hard, and you get out in the field, you do your thing, and you get your money, and you take care of yourself. And that's what Ecclesiastes is all about, and that is the good and the righteous and the godly thing to do. We should do that. We should be proud of that. But we have become so useless financial independence. We won't borrow from other people. We feel that we need to fully protect ourselves, and God forbid that we need to help from other people. It's one reason why I think we protect ourselves so much financially, because we can't rely on other people. So we need to be financially independent. And also we expect other people to be financially independent as well. Because if that's what we're doing, everybody takes care of themselves, I'm doing my thing, you need to do your thing. And certainly Thessalonians, it condemns people who won't work. And I'm not saying that that's an acceptable thing to do. But since we feel we need to be financially independent, we see other people who aren't financially independent, they're struggling and they are needy. I think very quickly, we jump to the conclusion that it's their fault. And yes, and Proverbs will tell you, a lot of poverty is the fault of the person. And being lazy, unwillingness to work, and a number of things, we can bring poverty upon us. But we're so quick to say, well, that's that person's fault that they're poor, therefore I'm free of the burden of taking care of this person. I don't think that's God. I don't think it is. So we need to try to break away from that mentality. Also, we're kind of used to the government taking care of those who are in need. There's welfare. You know, when someone is down and out, they go to the government has to take care of that person. I pay my tax dollars, so indirectly, I'm taking care of these people. And so we're just not accustomed to people needing us. We look at the in the Gospels, and when there was a lame man who was begging, or Lazarus who was begging, when you were disabled and you couldn't work, well, that was it. You know what I mean? No one was going to take care of you unless someone did. In our culture, gratefully or thankfully, you know, the government will step up and take care of people who can't take care of themselves. But does it mean that we're going to let the government take one of the greatest responsibilities of Christians, which is to care for the needy? So we need to be careful about that. The other thing, too, is we're just surrounded by prosperity, that we don't have a proper perspective of the way life should be. And we don't have a proper perspective of how much need there actually is. We go about our business, and occasionally we'll see someone homeless and someone needing what will pass. We'll make a decision, should we give this person or not? The fact is there are millions of people, billions rather, that we don't come in contact with, that are in need. If we were around these people more often, I think that we would be a lot more inclined to be benevolent as a bigger part of our lifestyle. I think it would happen. But we're sheltered and we're hidden from it, so it's not coming into our minds, and therefore I don't think we're really doing it as well as we should. I think another issue is, I think we've had some trouble maybe in our congregations, because the whole issue of how is the church supposed to use its money? And, you know, back in the 60s, I guess, there was a big division in a lot of churches as far as how we should use the church's money. And a lot of churches felt that, well, we need to start using the congregation's money, the money we collect on Sunday, and start using that for, you know, secular people in need, like orphan homes and hospitals and things like that. So they would take the money from the church and begin using it for that, and that's how you see Christians giving to the church and the church giving to the poor. Although it's definitely a Christ-like mentality, of course, to take money and give it to the poor, I don't feel that that was the best thing to do for a couple of reasons. We need to realize the extremely loud silence the Bible does have. I mean, it just seems so obvious that that we should use the church's money to give to the poor. But the fact that that remains absent from the Scripture, it should make us think for a second. Jesus Christ could have very easily put that in there if that's what he wanted us to do. You know? But we see a million examples of the church giving money to needy saints. So I'm inclined to think that we give our money to the church, to ourselves, and as we see, that money is used for the needy saints. The saints in Jerusalem, the saints at East Orange, whoever. So we need to do that. But when we take the church's money and begin using that to give to the poor, we're stepping outside the authority. But more importantly, I think we're bypassing one of the most important obligations that is for a Christian. We give to each other. We give to the Lord. We give to the church, to our fellow needy saints. But we're not letting, you know, the church treasury take care of our need to give to the poor. We need to give to both. You know what I mean? If I'm just giving to the poor, and the church is, I mean, if I'm just giving to the church, and the church is giving to the poor, well, then I'm taking care of, and I'm avoiding one of my most important responsibilities, which is not just to give to my needy brethren, but also to give to the poor. So I think we're obligated to do both. And so I think that we've done very well in avoiding using the church's treasury for secular things that Christ has not given us the authority to do. But I think that we are greatly failing in the personal responsibility to give to the poor. But we're not going to use the Lord's money for that orphan home. But we're also not going to use our money for it either. And how is that okay? It's not any better. It's just as bad. We don't need to avoid one of our responsibilities for the sake of a doctrinal issue. We need to do what Christ commands us, which is both responsibilities. So we need to be doing that. Something we need to keep in mind. You know, if I was thinking about calling the sermon Give or Go to Hell, because it's accurate, but I thought I would be a little bit softer, so I just decided to make it this point. But man, that's the fact. We either give to the needy, or we don't go to heaven. This became very apparent to me as I was reading through Luke. We're talking four chapters and three examples where people's salvation was contingent upon whether or not they used their money for the poor. We are not excluded from these examples. Of course, there's a rich man in Lazarus. Go to Luke 16. I'm trying to decide if we'll read this or not. I believe most of us will be familiar. I think we're doing okay on time so far. Luke 16, verses 19. All right, it says, "Now there was a rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple, fine linen, joyously living in splendor every day." That sounds like the woe that Jesus mentioned in Luke 6. "And there was a poor man, Lazarus, who was laid at his gates, and he was covered with sores, longing to be fed with the crumbs which were falling from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom, and the rich man also died and was buried. In haste he lifted up his eyes, and being in torment, he saw Abraham far away and Lazarus in his bosom. He cried out and said, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus so that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame.'" You ever stop and wonder why this guy go to hell? Or Hades or that whole issue? Why? You know, what wrong thing did he do? It's the passage is, it's simply a neglect to use his blessings to give to those who did not have those blessings. He's condemned to hell because he did not share his blessings with someone in need. Here is a man whose salvation, his soul was lost, because he used his money for himself. We see, if you have money, that money is an obligation and a responsibility. If you don't use that obligation or that responsibility for the obligation to give to the poor, we're condemned by it. Woe to those who are rich now. Because we have such a great burden upon us to use our money in the proper way. You need to think about that. Just after that, Luke 18:18-23, a ruler questioned Jesus, saying, "Good teacher, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus says, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. Honor your father and mother. He said, all these things I have kept from my youth. When Jesus heard this, he said to him, one thing you still lack. Sell all that you possess and distribute it to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven. Come and follow me. When he had heard these things, he became very sad, for he was extremely rich. This rich young ruler loved his money too much. He loved his money more than he loved the poor. He loved his money more than he loved God, because he wasn't willing to follow God in this command. Those who are rich, our riches compete for our love. You know, our heart only has so much love to give. And our riches, they come in there and they take portions of our love away from God, away from our fellow man. And when our riches compete for our love, we won't be giving and sharing to other people. And that is a sign that we don't love God enough. This man failed to enter the kingdom of God because he would not use his blessings to give to the poor. We always say, well, you know, Jesus looked in this guy and he knew this guy's struggle was being rich. You know, who's to say that's not each one of our struggles as well? Why is that not our struggle? We are rich people. Why is it his struggle and not ours? And then just after that, we have the story of Zacchaeus. And of course, you know, Zacchaeus was a tax collector, and it seems by the following passages, he was the kind of tax collector that got rich abusing and stealing and taking advantage of people. But here Jesus was coming, he wanted to see Jesus. Jesus says, hey, Zacchaeus, come and eat with me. Look what he does in verse 8. Zacchaeus stopped and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor. If I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will give back four times as much. I don't know, for a tax collector, I don't think he knows his math too well. I don't know how he can do that. Give away half of what he has, and then four times of what he stole. Is he left with negative possessions? But I don't know. I mean, Luke is so much about the rich and about giving our blessings away. We've got two men who failed to enter in the kingdom, and Zacchaeus, who was the good example. What made him so good? He was willing to give up everything he had for the poor. So three stories in four chapters reveal our salvation's contingent upon how generous we are. It's not an option. It's not an added bonus. It's absolutely essential that we need to give. You know, we need to stop with this mentality that benevolence and generosity is bonus points. You know, I gotta quit my evil acts here. You know, I'm a little bit I have problems with impurity, I have problems with my language, I have problems being selfish. You need to get these things taken care of, because those are the important things. You know, but any chance we get to give to someone, like, you know, we'll give some money here, all right, bonus points. You know? It's not the way the Bible speaks. It's an essential part of our everyday life. We don't just put generosity on top of everything we do. It needs to be a part of what we do. So after these stories, again, continuing in chapter 19 of Luke, you've got the parable of the minas, or the minas, which is, you know, parallel to the talents, which is essentially a passage about people handling their money well. You know, one guy, he doubles his money, so does that guy, but the one guy doesn't double his money, and shame on him. Now, the parable is not about, you know, us multiplying our money, but it is, the story itself is about someone who handles his money well. And it comes in the context of Luke, and it makes me think of someone who did not handle his money so well, which we've already read in Luke 12, the rich fool who had so much stuff, he used all of his stuff to build more stuff to hold his stuff. And then he died and lost all of his stuff. That's the worst steward of money. That's the worst example of what we can do with our money. Is that what we're doing? I've come to think of money as essentially like hot potato. You know, you want to get rid of it before your time comes. You get the potato, you want to get rid of it before the buzzer goes off. If we get money, well, good for you. Find something to use that money on. Preferably something of value. Because when you die, you don't really sit on a load of money. That's a shame. Man, the resources that you have, the potential we could use for this money for a million good things, and we're just sitting on top of it, it's not good. We need to use our money for positive things. So let's continue now. We're moving very well. Let's look at some practical teaching concerning benevolence. Just quickly, I think two attitudes that we need to have when it comes to being benevolent. There's one we need to take. Personally, for me, it's hard sometimes to give because I just don't feel like I can do it. You know? I've had a lot of car expenses lately. And it's a burden. And like when you're living on a budget, and then you have an extra grain or something here, it makes you stress a little bit. And so you're thinking, well, I can't afford to give right now. And I've put off, I've been getting all kinds of Thanksgiving and Christmas invitation charity things. And I've been putting them off because I'm like, man, I'm being slammed with all these expenses right now. We should have faith when it comes to giving. We know the widow who she gave and who her two little copper coins. You know, it's not even a drop in the bucket as far as finances are concerned. But here's someone who had the faith and the strength to give up all that she had. We are sitting on more blessings than we need. American lifestyle is expensive. You know, I do need a car to do my work, and I'm blessed to have one. And rent in New York is expensive. It's expensive to live here. So we need money for these things. But man, we need to have faith and realize I can give to someone in need and I'm not going to suffer for that. Luke 18, 28 tells us this, I think. Luke 18, 28. Let's go to Luke 21 first. I lost my place. Okay, let's do. Luke 21 was the widow. Luke 18, verse 28 and 30 tells us. Peter says, "Behold, we have left our homes and followed you." And he said to them, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or wife or brothers or parents or children for the sake of the kingdom of God who will not receive many times as much at this time and in the age to come." And eternal life. So the idea is we're afraid to give because we're going to suffer for it. Christ says, you're not going to give and be forgotten. Anything you give up for the sake of my name, I will give back to you. Just in heaven, he says, even in this lifetime. Matthew 6 or 7. Matthew 6. Verse 26. It says, "Look at the birds of the air, for they do not sow, nor do they reap, nor do they gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? Who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life?" God takes care of the lesser creatures. God will take care of us. How much more will God take care of us if we are busy taking care of his children? Have faith and be willing to give, regardless of your financial situation. And second, obviously, we just need to be generous. We looked at the two examples, the guy who stored up all his barns. We looked at the rich young ruler. We looked at the rich man and Lazarus. They didn't give because they were greedy people. We cannot be reluctant to give because we want to use this for our own personal gain. We want to buy this fancy thing. We want to buy these clothes and these movies and this and that. Those things cannot be the reason we don't give to people in need. We're in big trouble if they are. So the two aspects we need to have, we need to have faith and we need to have generosity. Another thought, should there be a difference in our giving between Christians and unbelievers? I think this might be a fair question. Certainly, I think our Christian family should get priority. I mean, if there are needy people in our assembly, Well, by all means, take care of those needy Christians. It's one of the benefits God provided for us for being Christian. When you're a Christian, that's your welfare. That's your social security. We need to remember that and use our money that way. So take care of our fellow needy saints. There are Christians in Zimbabwe and other unfortunate countries that need our benevolence. We need to be doing something about that. Take care of our needy saints. So we should be doing that. However, we need to realize, though, that as far as at least our assembly, we should already be taken care of by the church treasurer. I mean, that's why we bring our money together every week. We bring the money for each other. There are uses where we see it's for evangelism and things like that. But it seems to me the more common use for church money is for each other. So if we're bringing our money to the church, you're already taking care of all the Christians. And I have a feeling our churches need to be more willing to use it for that. I remember there was a sick widow in the church I was going to. And she was a widow indeed. You know, I mean, an amazing, wonderful, deserving Christian woman. And we were taking care of her for a lot of her medical expenses because she was sick and things. But we were very reluctant to not use too much or to make sure we weren't wasting it on this and that. I have a feeling we should have been much more willing to give her that and more. I mean, that's what the money's for. Let's use the money we have to take care of each other. So the Christians, we're taking care of. Take care of ourselves here. Use your money to take care of Christians other places. But we also need to be willing to use our money for people who are not Christians. That's another responsibility we have. I know a lot of Christians who are very willing to give to fellow Christians. And I've been on the receiving end multiple times of extreme benevolence. We just drove to Indiana, which that cost like a lot of money. I had it all up. It kind of freaked me out. But I had received about $500 donation from one family in the last half year. Two different donations. So $500 for one family. It's a lot of money. So she gave to us for that. That's a big deal. So I know Christians that we are benevolent to each other. And we need to keep that up. But don't forget about the needy people in the world. Luke 6:30. In verse 33, it says, "Give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them." It's easy to give to each other. I mean, I feel much more inclined to give to my fellow Christians when they're in need, and I've done a decent amount of it. But sometimes it's hard to give to people we don't know. To give to people that we don't know their background, we never see them, I don't know. But we need to remember, we need to give to people who don't love us or who don't know us. We need to take care of everybody, because what benefit is it just giving to those who love you? That's not enough. We look at the Good Samaritan in Luke 10, and an amazing feat of benevolence. Not just money, but also the time and the effort he put forth. That was an absolute stranger. And that was what even they would have considered as an enemy, and yet he's willing to give him. The idea that we're going to differentiate, well, I'll give to my Christian brethren, that kind of sounds like willing to justify ourselves. We say, who is my neighbor? Who do I have to give to? We have to give to our Christian brethren. We have to give to the needy saints of the world. How else are we going to be a good example to the world around us if we are not doing that? Just more practical teaching. As far as giving to individuals or giving to charities, we might be reluctant to give to a homeless individual. I think probably almost everybody here has experienced this. You know, in New York you get it a lot. You know, the person comes up and it's a homeless guy. And you know, he's asking you and many other people for money. And you deliberate, should I give this person money? We always go through the routine. Well, I don't know what he's going to use it for. You know, he looks like he could be drunk, or I don't know. Maybe if I give it to him, he's just going to use it for something bad. You know, and we go through that process. I think that makes sense. I mean, You know, I've seen people hold up signs. I'm being honest, I just want a beer. I don't give to those people because I know what they're going to use their money for, and that's a waste of my money. And it's just improper to be able to buy someone a beer anyways. And there are things that we can do to ensure that our money is being put to good use. We can, you know, guys have asked me for coffee, and I'm wearing my Starbucks uniform, so I'm like, okay, come on, let's go. And he won't follow me because he just wants a dollar. I'm like, well, okay. And there are things we can do to make sure that we're not wasting money. But I think sometimes we kind of need to drop the attitude. If we don't know, we could just do it anyways. We're not accountable to that person and how they use the money. Philippians 4:17, Paul says, not that I seek the gift itself, but the profit that increases for you. You know, Paul's like, whoa, you're giving me money. That's awesome for you guys. You know, when you give an individual money, good has already been done because you have done the good deed and you've increased because the good deed's been done, regardless of how that money's been spent. So we can use our money for that without regret. Also, is it a sin to be taken advantage of? If someone wants to abuse your generosity and waste it, is that a sin against you? It's not a sin. Matthew 5 reminds us of this. Matthew 5:39. But I say to you, don't resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other. Also, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Give to him who asks of you and do not turn him away, him who wants to borrow from you. The idea is if people take advantage of you, then let them take advantage of you. Someone's going to take advantage of your generosity. That's not your business. They can do that if they want to. And you can allow them to do that. We still need to give. 1 Corinthians 6:7, when they're suing each other, it says, isn't it better to be defrauded rather than to sue each other? Isn't it better to be defrauded in our generosity than to be greedy? So something to think about when it comes to giving individuals that we don't even know. But Exodus 23:6 is the passage, you know, don't pervert justice for the sake of a poor man. The idea when they would take each other to, you know, some sort of law, whether you punch this person or whatever, and my ox killed you, I don't know. The idea is don't show favor to someone's poor. Don't be like, well, they are poor. That's too bad. And you pervert justice and cut them a break just because they're poor. Just don't do that. We can't have this attitude. We don't want to just do stupid and foolish things just because someone's poor. I mean, I think we should push generosity, but it makes sense to think about, I don't want to buy someone a beer just because they're poor. And me personally, living in New York, I was conflicted for a long time. I would give to individuals a lot, and I didn't feel bad. You know, I would give, and I would still feel crummy as if I didn't give. Because I just didn't feel like it did any good. Of course, the fact that I don't feel like it did any good doesn't mean I should quit doing it. If that was the only opportunity to do good, I should still do it. The fact is it wasn't satisfying, and it wasn't a pleasurable thing to do. So it doesn't free me from my responsibility to help that person. But it does give me the option to look for a more valuable use for my money. If you don't feel comfortable using your money for these things, find something that you're comfortable using your money for. And so that's what I began to do. You know, I think charities are a good and a wonderful thing to do because you know what your money is being used for. They tell you where it's going. They tell you the results. So I know my X amount of money here is being put to use. Maybe I'll use an equal amount of money given to people on the streets, and I wonder about that. I might as well just use that money for something that I know is being positive. The point is, don't just like, well, this person's going to buy a crack. I'm not going to give that person. And you don't give to anybody. Well, that's stupid. You know, if you don't feel comfortable giving here, find somewhere that you know you can give. A couple of charities that I'm familiar with. This is a Bowery Residents Committee. And the Bowery's always been like, halfway houses for the last like 40 years and things. It's being built up more. But this is a homeless and needy aid thing that I got involved with pretty soon after I moved to New York. I did some volunteering there for a little bit, not too long. But the idea is they bring in all kinds of people and work to make them independent. It's not just feeding them in a soup kitchen. It's about trying to change and transform lives. There's 8,702 people who are served annually by BRC programs. Anybody can come in. You know, and the person you give to the street, that person can go to the shelter and immediately be taken in. As long as they follow the rules of not being on drugs and things like that. Anybody can go to this thing. 70% of the people who are living there have addictions, mental illnesses, or both. So the fact is, you know, these people are in great need. They're not just lazy people. You know, you can be a fool, make some bad decisions. Have you guys made bad decisions? Of course you have. If your bad decision has been a drug, well, that can ruin your life. It doesn't mean you should suffer for it for the rest of your life. So these people are in great need. 3,325 people, 63% are people who have successfully completed the BRC programs, which means they are either living completely independent in their own apartment with their own job, or they're living in an apartment and a job from the BRC. It's just an effective program helping all kinds of people. On the bottom, only 519 people are individually giving to the BRC. Just a good charity. I don't know. Another thing, a different kind of charity, is this is Oxfam. And it's a similar kind of concept, not just giving out food, but going into developing and third world countries and building programs and organizing wells and cleaning up rivers and planting farms and I don't know, different kinds of things like that, and trying to get these people able to maintain themselves. And these people are impoverished not because they're lazy. It's because the places that they live are not suited for good living. And often it's because the government, the rulers, are hoarding all the money and these people are left with nothing. There's a lot of needy people and a lot of good ways that we can help. And these kinds of charities, you just go through your budget, you make a change, you set up a monthly payment, and you're helping people. That's it. We don't want to just put a monthly payment, forget about it. We want our benevolence to come from the heart. The idea is there's no excuse for us not to be doing something to help somebody. And if we don't, we won't have any excuse to tell God of why we did it. So in conclusion, as we said before, generosity to the poor is not an option. I want this to be a powerful lesson, not just because, you know, it's fun to teach a powerful lesson, and people say, wow, that was a powerful lesson, Tim. I just genuinely think that we are missing the mark, at least in my experience, in this area. Of course, Matthew 6 tells us when you give, don't let your left hand know you're doing it. So I'm sure there are people doing and giving that I don't know about. But I'm convinced that we're all not so clandestine that that's why we don't know anything about it. I think we need to be doing better at this. Matthew 25:31-46, it summarizes Judgment Day. These people go to hell because they didn't take care of my children. They didn't feed them. They didn't clothe them. These people are going to heaven because they fed and clothed my children. You need to remember that. Of course, if anyone here is not a Christian, realize we aren't saved by our good works. You can give everything you have to the poor, but without God's grace, it's not going to do you any good. We need to accept God's grace and then begin living our life of charity.